Right now, it is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal, the good new days. Of course, we are joined every week by Cynthia Hauswinder and also by Janet Manco. And they're with us today. Oh. Are you there, Cynthia?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's good. We lost Janet. Hold on.
I don't know what's with Janet's phone.
Well,
that's kind of weak.
We're gonna try it again here again. So you're going to hear a dial tone. I'm not hanging up on you. So we're going to go... I could have dialed the wrong number. That's a very good possibility.
Really?
Yep, that's obviously what happened. Unless it goes again.
Yeah, or maybe the battery. Hello?
Hello, Janet. I must have dialed the wrong number the first time. Sorry about that.
Oh, okay. Do you want me to hang up?
No.
You're
no, we want
now.
You. You're here.
We're live on the air. Thank
Good
goodness.
Good morning,
goodness.
Everybody.
Good morning. Okay. I'm going to start off this morning, but I'm not going to start off with the story in the Lakeville Journal. I'm sorry, Janet. We're going to start off with a story that is somewhat surprising out here, but it happened, and that is the Whitney Joseph story in the Millerton News about the stabbing fatality on South Amenia Road. A very big, big story that people seem to know about a day or two in advance, but you've got all the details on the front page of the Millerton News.
We do, and what a difficult story to report on, a tragic, tragic situation. This is a story that Whitney was reporting as we were. She pulled out all the general information and then had everything confirmed by the public information officer for the New York State Police just shortly before we went to press, and that is that there was a stabbing fatality on South Amenia Road in Amenia at a residence, and it was confirmed that the suspect is 26-year-old David Trotta. And we do have all the details. Anyone who has been curious about it and hearing gossip about it, this is actually what happened and what the information is that's out there up to this moment. And our condolences to the victim and his family, and just a tragic situation all around.
And good news to the state police. There was so much traffic on Facebook about it. People speculating. So just the horrible thing about Facebook, that they came out with that press release and issued it out to everybody. And it's just one of those stories that's a shocker. But I wanted to mention that if anybody still thinks they know what happened and you haven't read the story, read the story. You'll find out exactly what went on.
That's right. It's an unusual situation in that Monday was a holiday for much of law enforcement and those who were working on this, so that it made it more difficult to get the information out in a quick fashion, as they always try to do. But the information was out before we went to press, and it's all in this story.
All right, we will slide back over to the Lakeville Journal. And once again, the main story. Cynthia, you have the top-line story here. Seeing the forest and trees in a multi-layered protest against DEEP actions.
I'm waiting to get some response to this. This is a, and the story is meant to reflect this. This is a situation where many people have very strong and all completely valid opinions that are deeply, deeply at odds with each other. So it's a tricky story to report. I mean, we always try to not take a side and to just kind of say, here's what's happening. I anticipate that that people will read this and that listeners in your area will read it and think like, oh, we have a bias toward one side or another. But I would say we definitely don't. We can see everybody's point of view. Right over on Route 7 near the intersection with Route 4 in Sharon, right near the Cornwall Bridge, not the picturesque old covered bridge, but the new concrete bridge with the gas station, there is a picnic area and a large parking lot, and a little bit farther away is the camping area up the river. And it's a very special part of the Housatonic River and a very special part of the state park system. We have statistics in this article about usage, which for the daytime usage, of course, has doubled in COVID. And there are thousands of trees there, but there were a bunch of beautiful old oak trees, and there are also a bunch of pines. And some of those trees have been failing across the state. Ever since 2018, the state has been doing a tree hazard removal program. and it was Sharon Cornwell's turn. There had been a tree that fell across the parking lot in 2021. There have been lawsuits against the state for negligence. You know, again, there's a lot of people using these parks, a lot more using them now, and so the state felt like, well, we can sort of see that there's problems in the road ahead on these trees. And anybody who pays attention around here, you know, there was the moth infestation last year that was just epic and will be 100 times bigger this year because each of those moths laid eggs and there's 100 potential new moths in each egg sac. So we're going to see a rain cloud of these moths next year. And they really weaken the hardwood trees because they eat all of the greens. And the general consensus is the trees can survive 1 year, but they probably won't survive a second. And then there's the emerald ash borer, which is, you know, again, if you're paying attention, ash trees dead all over the northwest corner. You know, if you were buying firewood this year, you were buying ash because there was so much of it. And then, of course, the pine trees. And they're all being hit by drought, by climate change, by these infestations that are coming as part of drought and climate change. So the state feels one of these trees is going to fall on somebody. We need to go in and take them out. But then there's an equally passionate group that feels like, you know, there's a lot of wild animals that live in these forests. There's bald eagles that have been in abundance along the Housatonic River in the past couple of years, like an amazing return of a really special bird. Some of them, in fact, were flying around during a protest the other day as the state was cutting trees. So they felt these trees shouldn't be taken down. The state should wait until they die and then take them down. But, you know, as anybody knows who's tried to do any budgeting, if you're a big operation like the state, you can't just, like, send a crew out for one tree. You have to kind of either do it all at once or not. So it's tricky, and the trees are down. They just sort of forged ahead with the cutting, and there's a lot of sadness among the people who are trying to protect those trees, and I guess there's another cutting planned for Mount Easter. And again, there's dispute between one group of arborists from the area and another who sort of say, it looks pretty responsible. The ones that they picked seem well chosen, and another arborist saying, like, forget it. They can just be pruned. They can go through tree by tree and fix them. And I don't know that anybody will ever be happy with this story.
Yep. And you've got right next to it, Patrick Sullivan has a story on the legislators criticizing the Department of Environmental Protection.
Right, and their main thing is not so much about the trees. It's more about how it was communicated. And Deputy Commissioner Mason Trumbull, even in the January 6th hearing, was like, oh, my gosh, you know, I'm with you guys. Look, he's a sort of adorable, young, bearded, you know, person. He said, like, I used to be a river guide. I'm a fly fisherman. I'm a hiker. I'm with you on this. But he said, yeah, we blew it. We didn't communicate well. Let's communicate better. But at the end of the meeting, he's like, we're still cutting those trees. And that was a misunderstanding that some of the tree people, the tree protective people, also.
All right, so I want to go over to the story about Maria Horn and Craig Miner. Maria, of course, held it was going to be live, but it was too cold and too slippery outside, so she held an online announcement that she's running for a third term, and both Maria and Craig are sharing their topics as they look towards a new session, which might open in person on February 9th.
We'll just see. You know, we keep having reports that COVID is going to largely lose its teeth by the end of January, and that maybe life will return a little bit to normal in February, and that would feel so great. But so Maria and Craig spoke to Patrick about what they expect for what will be a short session. In Connecticut, legislators are historically expected to have another full-time job, and so our sessions are very short. They happen at the beginning of the year. And in even-numbered years like this, it's a short session where they're only supposed to deal with budgetary issues and emergencies. Of course, a lot of things end up getting addressed in addition, but the big topics this year include one that I hope everybody's paying attention to because it's a really big deal, which is how we dispose of our trash in the northwest corner. It has been going to a facility in Hartford that's about to be shut down in July because it was allowed to really fall out of repair to the point where it can't really be repaired. So at this point, the state is looking to ship our garbage down to, it looks like, Alabama and Ohio, which makes people feel badly that somebody else has to take our trash, but also is going to be really expensive for us. So all of us are going to see an increase in those rates, and all the towns are now looking at ways to compost more and to recycle more. We're all pretty good at that, but we will see. There will be a lot of discussion about that in this session. And, of course, COVID and how we deal with that.
A nice story by Patrick Sullivan on Dr. Martin Luther King's experience of equality in Connecticut.
Right. An early experience working on tobacco farms here as a young man and being treated like an equal. And as he said, I could go out to dinner and not be, and he said it was very hard to go back to the South and be treated as though, you know, he was another like an outsider who was not allowed to sit with other people, who's not allowed to dine with other people. So a nice story about Connecticut from Jeremy Brecker in Cornwall.
Right, and Janet, we'll bring you in here because a nice picture of Patrick out on the river fishing, but he has extended his reach not only on the river but at the Lakeville Journal.
That's correct. This is a great picture of Patrick. That's his other favorite thing to do besides writing for the papers and doing local journalism. And so we're glad that Patrick will be taking on the role of managing editor. We had thought that he would be working with a new editor who we had in place, and that was Deborah Alexinis, and we did a story about her transition to Lakeville Journal editor last week. But as of yesterday, we'll break this news here, she decided it was not a role she wanted to continue in and that it just wasn't the right job for her, and so she is stepping back from that role. You know, we don't want anybody to do what they don't want to do at work. I mean, we spend a lot of time working, and we at the Lakeville Journal and Millerton News have a passion for local journalism, and we just hope to find others who do as well. And so we wish Deb the best. We feel a bit deflated, you know. Of course, it was more than a month of work and training, and you know, we were ready to move forward. But this is how life goes sometimes. And so Cynthia is, you know, who makes this job look so easy, is willing to stick with us until we find someone else. And we're, you know, we're looking for the right person now who will be able to step into this role. So anyone listening, if you're interested in local journalism, by all means, contact us.
All right. What are the stories? We look at all the towns around here basically are looking for input on housing plans. It seems like it anyway.
Right. And Jocelyn Eyre, who had been at the COG, the Regional Organization of First Selectmen, has now stepped out and is doing housing consulting. And so she asked us to put in this notice about surveys being presented by three towns in the area, Sharon, Kent, and North Canaan. And if you live in those towns, you should definitely log in and express your opinion.
All right. And the lake froze over early this year, I guess, as opposed to last year's in Lakeville.
Well, you know, Don Mayland, who is the Iceman in Salisbury for Lake Winnanskapomic, has records that that Walt Shannon used to keep, and they go back to the early 1900s, and so Don has information on earlier ice-ins that happened in December, but it does seem fairly early for us. January and February really are the coldest months here in the northwest corner, and of course rivers are frozen. People are getting ready to go out and start doing ice fishing and doing cross-country skiing around the edges of the lake. There was a brief moment when people could skate before the snow came and kind of corrupted the surfaces, but everyone has always remembered, don't go out on the ice alone. And if you go out, always take those little ice picks. You can make them yourself with a piece of wood and drive a long nail through it, and take those with you to help pull yourself up and out. It's very hard when you're wet on soft ice to pull yourself up. So it may look safe. There are often soft spots. Be careful.
All right, the Sharon Selectmen, this is interesting to us because we've been watching this develop with the parking lot here in Sharon. Finally, it looks like we're going to get some action in the next year and a half to get this parking lot done and the drainage in and improve more parking spaces and even have charging stations for electric vehicles.
And interestingly, the charging stations was a point of contention for the electric vehicles. And somebody's like, why do we need that? And Brent Colley, the first selectman, said it's a condition of the grant because I guess we're looking at electric vehicles as the future. But of course, here in Salisbury and Falls Village, where there is no parking lot, the Sharon parking lot seems very luxurious and large, but it will be repaved and expanded.
And drainage, thank goodness, drainage is going to, all the neighbors are going to like that.
Yeah.
There's a story on freedom of information laws for people that follow that.
Kent hosted this. We had sort of thought that they had billed it as, here's how freedom of information is different in the age of Zoom and social media. It was a little bit more of just sort of a standard freedom of information seminar for new town officials. It was held on Zoom, so officials from all the area towns could take part. Leela gives a recap of it, just sort of a reminder, you know, what is an official meeting, when can you have an executive session, when can you vote, sort of all the things that are very useful to know in New England government.
We will move on for just a moment. We'll come back to Compass and got my paper all screwed up this morning. I don't know why.
And the Ann Arensburg Love Festival on the obituaries page.
Oh, that's right.
Great Anne Arensberg, widow of Dick Grossman, and we have more appreciations for her next week. And really an incredible woman, an incredible artist and writer, but we don't generally have a lot of, you know, obituaries about people just because they were great. But she was not only great, she was so loved. And so we'll have the formal obituary next week, plus more appreciations.
All right, we will go on to the editorial page, and then we also have the real estate section this week, which we'll talk about. But, yes, this is about affordable housing and more.
Right. It could seem to some people that, some of our readers, that we spend a lot of time talking about affordable housing, but I guess in a way, too, we feel as if it's not even enough because we feel it's so incredibly important to our region to have housing for everyone who works and wants to live here. So this is part of our ongoing wish list for our towns in the area. We have too many wishes to fit into just one week, the first week we published of the year, and so we're doing this ongoing. And affordable housing was important enough to pull out on its own, and so we go through our arguments for our towns to pursue anything they have out on the table now and to keep it in mind moving forward, look at who lives here and who works here and who should be living in the area rather than commuting into it, and making our community a more full community. We have a lot of new people moving in, and they have moved in and bought homes, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're part of the community, so we talk about that as well, encouraging them to find a way to connect and volunteer and understand the history of these communities.
And you've got letters, everything from COVID to the trees to what's happening at the Green Cafe and the Exercise Center.
That's right. That's a letter from Sharon Shard in Lakeville, and she describes a deep injustice in Lakeville around that very popular gym and cafe that Leslie Eckstein has been running for a number of years. And so Sharon tells the story of it. Do not miss this letter.
All right. And Lonnie Carter's got an interesting article, A Conundrum, Who Can or Should Write What?
That's right. Lonnie always not only has good and interesting ideas, but his own way of expressing them that makes it a joy to read. So we're always glad to have him on our pages. And this week he has a column about authenticity and who can write what in that. There's a popular thought that you write what you know. And so is it true that you can only write about something you've already lived? Can you not observe someone else's life and try to understand it through writing? So he makes these points really well. Do read that column and read Dick Ollis on the lies and betrayal that come out of the Trump presidency and beyond. And Rich Kessin writes about Omicron, a variant with 50 mutations.
It's amazing, and Peter Steiner has a cartoon which is currently going along with the tree cutting by the DEP.
That's right. He was inspired to do a local cartoon this week. Don't miss it. It brings the points home that he wants to bring.
And let's go now to Compass, because there's actually quite a lot you've got going on in Compass here, Cynthia.
And you say that because, as you know, there's a lot of stuff getting canceled, and so yeah. We have a little notice reminding people. Last week we had the ballet talk at the movie house. It was canceled literally an hour after the papers were printed. So do always double check before you head out someplace. But we have the Zoom talk by Michael Favola-Goldman, who was the translator of the third part of the Tove Ditlevsen Copenhagen trilogy, which has been a sensation apparently. And this is one of the nice things at Zoom, is that three libraries were able to come together and offer it as a group to their constituency. So information on that, January 27th. I don't know about you, but I'm not really itching to travel. I'm not desperate to get on an airplane the way some of my friends are, but it's something a little different would be nice. And so in Torrington, where I've been quite a bit lately, there's some actually not just big box restaurants. There are some very interesting ethnic restaurants. One is a brand new one from, I think it opened in August, called Tijuana Soul Food and Sweets. I didn't really go into the life history of the owner, but Tijuana is a young woman from Queens. She'd been a bus driver. It was her dream to open a restaurant. Her mom and her sister help her. We have a photo of her sister at the restaurant. You walk in, and it seems kind of dark, and the steam trays are covered. And they're so friendly. And as soon as you say, like, well, what's for lunch? They're like, oh, we've got ribs, and we've got this, and we've got that. And people seem to really love it, even though, you know, you don't think of Torrington as a super ethnically diverse town. Apparently people were lined up and weeping when they first opened. They were so excited to have it there. Yaya's Greek Kitchen. I'm from Chicago. I love Greek food. Janet and I had lunch there over the weekend. It was great. It's like Greek food, very healthy. And, of course, we're lucky to have the Four Brothers restaurants, which also has very healthy, very fresh Greek food. Yaya's is this adorable little mini taverna right in the middle of a tiny little mall in Torrington. We highly recommend it. If you've ever had dinner with me, you've probably had it at Vientiane Thai, really good Thai restaurant in the Stop and Shop Plaza in Torrington. And then if you're really feeling adventurous, the Banana Brazil Argentine barbecue restaurants are fantastic and worth the drive. A little harder to get takeout from them. Patrick did a review of a talk on Zoom by Tom Morrison, who was interviewed by Bill Litauer, a journalist, which is great, and two funny guys, and who would think Tom Morrison could find the humor in tort law, but he did, and has written two novels about it. But we felt it was important to also mention Ralph Nader's Tort Law Museum, because Tom is kind of making fun of it a little bit. But Ralph is very earnest, although he's quite funny too. And he really says, you know, in this museum, you can understand why tort law exists. It's to protect you and your rights from these big corporations. So people shouldn't abuse that right, but they should know that they have it. The museum is closed until April, but you can go online and see a lot of their exhibits very easily. They do a nice job of presenting it, and they have lots of events and activities there. Of course, the movie house is showing a really nice mix of old and new films, but the Mahewi is periodically doing like a series. And so the series of four films, it's hard to see how they're all connected. They've got everything from Roman Holiday to The Shining to, what was the fourth one? Oh, The Gods Must Be Crazy. Really diverse selection, but some information on how you can see those. And a Zoom talk coming up about an author named Cornelia Brooks Gilder at Ventport Hall.
And as I said, Janet, in this edition, you've got the edition of the Tri-Corner Real Estate.
We do. If anybody was thinking, oh, all the properties have already sold around here. No, they haven't. There are plenty left, and we have 12 pages worth of homes and properties that are up for sale. So it's always interesting to look through, whether you're on the market or not. You just don't know when you'll see your perfect dream home or property.
That is the Lakeville Journal and Millerton News. TriCornerNews.com is where you can find all the information on the web. You can also subscribe and get home delivery, and you can stop by and pick it up at various newsstands. But once again, TriCornerNews.com. It's the way I go to it. I'm sorry. I open up the PDF version of both papers, and I peruse it that way. It's just a real convenient way.
Well, I don't.
you're the ink on the hands.
Both are good.
Absolutely.
And the nice thing about that online version is you can enlarge it, you can search it. No, there are so many different things you can do.
No, I agree. But the thing is, your brain takes it in differently when you're looking at it.
Right. We should do a whole show on that.
I'm happy to.
All right, guys. We'll speak to you next week. Have a good week.
You too.
Be safe.
Take care. That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal. Once again, they are available at TriCornerNews.com.